This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, did you see this story about Matthew Judon threatening to share the pictures of this ESPN Ravens reporter from a strip club because of his shoddy reporting? Matthew Judon, the linebacker for the Ravens, that played last year under the franchise tag. I guess the Ravens have a reporter, the ESPN reporter for the Ravens. This is, I guess, the equivalent of Sarah Barshop is our Texans ESPN reporter. His name is Jameson Henley. And the story is that Matthew Judon, who played last year under the franchise tag, so is a free agent again this year. He's mad at Hensley for reporting the Ravens linebacker turned down a deal with the Ravens. In his report, Hensley writes, Judon, quote, fell short of expectations after getting the franchise tag, recording 6 sacks and 21 quarterback hits in 2020. The ESPN reporter goes on to say Judon turned down a long-term deal last summer that would have been in the $16.5 million per year range. That appears to be what triggered Judon, who's going into his sixth year out of Grand Valley State. He was so emotional that he went nuclear and threatened to release photos of Jameson Hensley at a strip club with him. The ESPN reporter isn't apologizing for his report and seems to be calling Judon's bluff. He's basically saying, yeah, bring it on, big man. Okay, go ahead. Where does the threat of strip club photos posted on social media rank as far as a proportional response to what a player feels is shoddy reporting?
So, I guess the thing that Judon gets to wonder about in something like that is you have to ask yourself first, okay, well, does this person actually care, first of all, whether the strip club photos get released or not? I mean, was he doing something that's going to get him fired, or was he doing something that's going to get him divorced or something? I don't know. I feel like for something that wasn't really the report's just a report of an offer that he turned down. So like, even if that was an inaccurate report, that doesn't seem like that elicits that kind of a response,
right?
That's you might be upset that it was an inaccurate report, because that is frustrating when there's an inaccurate report of how much you were offered and you turn it down, and it feels like you're being made to look like you're greedy or unrealistic or something. That is very frustrating, but it doesn't seem like that would rise to the level of, I'm going to ruin this guy's life.
It's not clear in the story what exactly is triggering Judon, because it could be one of two things. He could be mad that Hensley is saying that he fell short of expectations of the franchise tag, 6 sacks, 21 quarterback hits, that maybe the Ravens were expecting more, or yes, it could be that the $16.5 million per year figure is inaccurate. It's unclear in this story what it is, to which I would say if it was inaccurate, the dollar range that he was being offered, I would say, you know, unless it's grossly inaccurate, I would say get over it. If it's about Hensley's opinion that Judon fell short of expectations, I would probably say the same thing. Like, get over it. Stop being so thin-skinned, Matthew Judon.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We're getting a lot of people weighing in on the sex addict stuff, Sean.
Yeah.
People,
are you feeling worse about what we were saying?
Yeah. No, I'm not feeling bad about it. I'm trying to remember what he's, let's see, somebody, no, it's getting fired from 5 jobs for watching pornography. It's committing suicide. It's going to prison for child porn.
Yeah,
that sounds realistic, and that might make sense. Yeah. Just like with alcoholism or any other thing that I make fun of, like that I've also personally experienced, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was pretty clear those weren't the people we were making fun of.
We were talking about sex addict therapy and how much fun it might be. All right, Pastor John, is this damn Easterby texting into me now onto the show, trying to make me feel guilty about how much fun sex addict therapy would be?
We were talking about Tiger Woods. his version of sex addictiveness, addictism. I don't know. His version
That's
was
true. His version
was like he was having group sex with lots of random women.
Like Perkins waitresses and stuff like that.
Yeah, he was having sex in a parking lot. Right. Yeah, it definitely devastated his life.
Right,
yeah,
right. No, other than the car accident, he seems to have recovered okay.
I still choose to believe that there's in my fantasy version of sex addict therapy, it's a raucous and hilarious place.
Right. Okay. 713-572-4610.
This pastor's not going to knock me off of my fantasy of sex addict therapy.
Text message. This goes back to my either or that I gave you earlier in the show, Seth, about would you have to give one of these contracts before the season, 8 years, $250 million to Correa, or 5 years, $100 million to Lance McCullers. I believe after going back and forth, you settled on McCullers. Correa seems to be winning this on the text page. And I think I may have come in a little expensive for McCullers at $20 million a year over 5 years. This is a good point that's been pointed out to both you and I believe, by the same person. Sean P., most forget the beloved Lance McCullers imploded in the playoffs last year, as he also did on the road last season, the least effective of all postseason Astro pitchers, also the least effective on the road Astro pitcher last year. Award him with 5 years, $100 million for 2017 curveballs, back to the future. So, yeah, I don't know. $20 million is probably overshooting it a little bit. I would say maybe 5 years, $75 million or something like that. Would Lance go for that would be my question. Or does Lance seem like someone who would want to test himself about hitting free agency?
If he's saying he wants to re-sign here, but the injuries are obviously going to affect his value right now. He'd be really, really hard to – he has more of an incentive to just go ahead and play out the season, I think, than Carlos Correa does.
Yep.
Because I think Correa, teams are more willing to overlook the vast injury history with Carlos Correa. Because I guess, at least for one, is the injuries don't seem to be as devastating or as severe. The Tommy John surgery, Lance in some ways kind of – it's one of those things where no good deed goes unpunished. Like, he pitched through a torn UCL. Like, he needed Tommy John surgery, and he pitched through it. And you look at the numbers from that year, and you say, oh, wow, not that impressive in September in the playoffs. He was pitching through a torn UCL. But all you do is you look at the box score and you say, oh, well, that's you can't trust this guy, because he basically did what a lot of it, like very few athletes would actually pull that off. And that's where I guess I know I'm getting too emotional or like too attached to the player about that, but that is a big part of that 2018 legacy of his. He pitched through a torn UCL.
Yep.
And you're sitting here telling me, well, look at how bad he was in the playoffs in 2018. He was pitching with a torn UCL. He shouldn't have even been out there. He should have already had surgery at that point.
Diana Rossini, the other bit of news that we didn't get to in headlines, according to Diana Rossini of ESPN, she covers the NFL, that there is a team out there that has offered J.J. Watt between $15 and $16 million a year. Text message asked the question. It's a good question. Who was that? I'll say this, Seth. There aren't many teams that would theoretically be in the J.J. Watt market that are equipped to offer $15 or $16 million a year. I'm going to go ahead and say it, that if I had to pick which team that probably was, I'm going to say the Cleveland Browns, who have over $20 million in cap space right now, who were forecasted by their beat writer, Mary Kay Cabot, as a team that J.J. Watt was, quote, seriously considering. And they're also a team, if you remember, Seth, they were a team that kind of overbid on Jadeveon Clowney last year.
That's right. They did, didn't they?
They did. Clowney said no.
He turned down more than he eventually got for Tennessee, right?
He did. He might have turned down more than $15 or $16 million a year from Cleveland. Now, keep in mind, Cleveland was coming off a 6-10 year. They weren't coming off an 11-5 year. Clowney winds up signing with Tennessee, which was coming off of a trip to the AFC title game. In the end, the big loser in the whole thing was Clowney, who stunk this year. But I'm going to say Cleveland was that team, if I had to guess.
I'm wondering in all of these about Jacksonville, not just with J.J. Watt, but with a lot of free agents, whether Jacksonville might be a much big player, because nobody's got more cap space than Jacksonville. Their owner's willing to spend. And I do wonder about Urban Meyer's maybe ability to try to convince a bunch of guys that, hey, look, I've won everywhere I've ever gone. It's been a quick turnaround everywhere I've ever gone. I expect that. I expect to do that in the NFL. We're going to have Trevor Lawrence and or Deshaun Watson as our quarterback. And we're going to do this thing and you don't have to wait. So I wonder if it could be Jacksonville. Jacksonville has a history of doing stuff that nobody's talking about. You know, when they drafted Blake Bortles, not a single mock drafted had mocked him to go to the Jaguars. Sometimes they draft a quarterback, or sometimes they'll draft a Leonard Fournette instead of a Deshaun Watson or a Patrick Mahomes. It's not always for the best, but they do stuff. They've got a way of keeping things quiet down in that small media market of theirs.
It's a good point by you. You know, when Diana Rossini says that one team offered $15 to $16 million a year. Any team can make an offer. It doesn't have to be a team J.J. Watt would necessarily be interested in going to. That's a good point.
No, and it stands to reason that the team with the highest offer would be one that we're not talking about.
Overbid,
right now. Yeah. Yeah, if it's the Washington football team, perhaps, who have $38 million of cap space, have a promising defense, perhaps maybe the Washington football team with a defensive minded head coach, a veteran defensive minded head coach, that might make sense.
With former teammate Taylor Heinicke, a quarterback for J.J. Watt.
Yeah, right? And not to mention you could reunite J.J. Yeah, look, what's his name? Alex Smith is claiming that the Washington football team doesn't even like him. Yep. What better way to even further piss off Alex Smith than to bring in the guy who snapped his leg into J.J. Watt?
Where does Will Fuller, that's right, I forgot about that. Where does Will Fuller stack up in this year's wide receiver free agent class? Is the franchise tag too big a risk? We'll talk about it next. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Thursday. A little over an hour from now, Darren Revelle, Action Network, will join us, get his takes on Tiger Woods, sports gambling in Texas, all kinds of good stuff to get into with Darren Revelle of the Action Network. 713-572-4610 if you want to get in on the show. So The Athletic has a piece where they are stack ranking the receivers in this year's free agent class, and relevant to the Texans because Will Fuller is a free agent wide receiver. Seth, they've got these guys ranked in tiers, and I guess I generally speaking, think this falls about right as far as Will Fuller goes, a healthy Will Fuller. Tier one of the wide receiver class they categorize as empty the wallet, which is two people, Allen Robinson and Chris Godwin. They are viewed as the top of market guys right now. Do you agree with the assessment on those two guys as top of market
guys? Yeah, I think the big question with Allen Robinson would be also, hey, if you'd had him with a quarterback other than Mitch Trubisky, what might he have done? And I guess, and that's where you also have to – I heard somebody yesterday saying, hey, you know, Mitch Trubisky, when you look at the entire career so far, he's actually just been a little below average. Yeah, he's also had Allen Robinson. So I think Allen Robinson has propped up Mitchell Trubisky a little bit. Mitchell Trubisky has pulled Allen Robinson down. I think if he goes somewhere with a quarterback like DeAndre or Deshaun Watson or somebody, then, yeah, he could be really, really good.
Yeah, he was also the number two pick in the draft. He's not supposed to be slightly below average.
Yeah, I know. Well, yes, I don't know who this is. It must be somebody that knows. Who the hell was it?
Yeah.
But, yeah, Trubisky has not been good.
I think Robinson can be a true number one. I think he's been a true number one before. Godwin is an interesting one because we know how that goes sometimes, Seth. When guys get out of situations where they've got really, really potent threats on the opposite side, and he's had Mike Evans on the opposite side this whole time in Tampa Bay, you know, drawing some of that attention away.
That's where, you know, look at Juju Smith-Schuster, who's down there in tier number two.
Yep.
Where, yeah, Juju Smith-Schuster was looking like he was going to be the next Antonio Brown until he didn't have Antonio Brown.
He was named the Steelers team MVP one year while Antonio Brown was still on the team, which was reportedly one of the reasons why Antonio Brown got worked up.
It's the beginning of the end is what it was.
Yep.
This little trollop comes in. He's a home wrecker is what he is.
Yep.
And his name is... That's why Antonio Brown started acting the fool. He found out that it was, he had this other person.
Home wrecker named Juju came in. So tier two, tier one, Allen Robinson, Chris Godwin. Tier two, which is a notch below... What's so funny?
I'm just... Juju Smith-Schuster. One of the weirdest, strangest... When Juju Smith-Schuster, remember you wore a Star of David? And somebody asked him about his Star of David?
Yeah.
And he was like, no, I'm not Jewish. They just, people call me Juju.
I think you're thinking of Jerry Judy.
Oh, Jerry Judy. It was Jerry Judy. Okay, yeah, so Juju didn't do it. Okay,
Jerry Judy's nickname was Jew, so he put a Star of David on himself.
Yeah. And there was nothing malicious. It wasn't one of these, like, nobody tried to cancel Jerry Judy or anything.
Are you sure?
But it was just, some non-Jewish person tried to cancel Jerry Judy.
Right.
You know, somebody stood up on behalf of everybody.
Sticking up for the Jewish people, yes.
Because it really wasn't. It was a good moment for him to learn. And he actually, I think he remembered, I remember it now, because it was during the combine, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
When he gave the answer.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting an education by it.
Tier two. Kenny Golladay, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Corey Davis. So those are the top five according to The Athletic. Seth, Will Fuller comes in at the top of Tier 3, which is starting caliber wide receiver, and they forecast his annual salary to be somewhere between $8 million and $12 million bucks. Would you bring back Will Fuller? Let's split the difference. $10 million. Would you bring back Will Fuller at 3 years, $30 million?
Yeah, I think I floated out 3 years, $10 million per year as something acceptable where you have to factor in his injuries. I am more pessimistic about Will Fuller's injuries than I am about Carlos Correa's injuries.
Ooh, I like that cross-sport comparison. Yeah.
It's a much more violent sport, you know? It's so, plus, Will Fuller can't play defense the way Correa can. I don't know if he can.
He's also a stick figure compared to Carlos Correa, who's actually, Correa's kind of a physical beast.
Yeah, but I feel like that works against him at shortstop. I feel like he's flinging around that big. It'd be like me going out and trying to play goalie for a day or something.
Right.
I would be a mess afterwards.
Yeah.
I'd get a broken rib and a massage afterwards. So the whole thing here is that Will Fuller should not be in Tier 3 if he were a guy who were healthy. Yeah, if Will Fuller had been healthy the last 5 years, for one, I don't think we'd be having this discussion. I think they would have locked him up long ago.
Yeah.
But we're having this discussion because he's injury prone. I think Will Fuller, if he were healthy for four straight years, would be just the same prospect that Allen Robinson or Chris Godwin is, or Kenny Golladay for sure, and better than Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yes.
It's just that you can't, and it's driving me insane that I keep seeing people say that he stayed healthy last year. He did not stay healthy. He didn't have an opportunity to stay healthy. He stayed healthy for 11 games. He missed 5 games. He didn't prove that he could make it through 16 games last year. And remember, there was that one weird game, the Ravens game, where even when he was wide-ass open, Deshaun wasn't looking at him. He was getting stretched on the sideline. So I think he was flirting with disaster at least once last year.
Yeah.
So I think this is exactly where he should be. His injuries are really, really going to hold him back. And then not to mention, PEDs don't usually hurt football players nearly the same way they might baseball players. But I think when it's a guy that's got injury histories and he did stay healthy for 11 games last year, how much of that was related potentially to the PEDs?
I think if you're a Texan fan and you're interested in the wide receiver position, I think we know Brandon Cooks is going to be back. Kiki QT is going to be back for the last year of his deal. We know Randall Cobb is going to be back because he's guaranteed a bunch of money, and I don't think anybody's going to take that contract off their hands. Seth, I do think that if you're the Texans and there winds up being a Deshaun Watson trade, if it involves a quarterback coming back in the deal, let's use the Dolphins as an example. If they wind up biting on a deal that involves Tua, then I think that number 3 overall pick, wide receiver, becomes as likely as any other position for the Texans to use that number 3 overall pick on. And I'm looking at a draft list for the wide receivers this year. It's a good class for wide receivers. Boy, the top 5 on this list are all SEC. They're all from the SEC.
Yeah.
Jamar Chase, LSU, Jalen Waddle, who's from Houston, Alabama, Devontae Smith, the Heisman Trophy winner, 3, Kadarius Toney from Florida, 4, and then the other kid from LSU, Terrence Marshall, is 5. So 5 SEC receivers in the top 5.
That's what makes it so much fun right now with internet chatter, is that when you've got 3 awesome wide receivers here, where you're really, you start splitting hairs and trying to figure out who's better than whom, and yet as soon as you say any one of them is the best one, you will just get you'll get death threats in your DMs from somebody at either Alabama or LSU or Alabama, yeah.
Okay, help me out with this. This is where I have a tough time reconciling. Devontae Smith won the Heisman Trophy. As someone whose alma mater got murdered by Devontae Smith in the playoffs, Devontae Smith had 200 yards receiving at halftime, literally, against Notre Dame in the playoff. So I watch him play, and I'm like, this kid is amazing. And yet I look at him, and I go, I could see where he would get bullied around quite a bit trying to get off jams at the line of scrimmage. Should I be overly concerned that Devontae Smith is a literal stick figure?
You should have a concern about it, but also recognize that so many of the old rules about body type and what you have to be at a specific position have really fallen by the wayside. And I think at the receiver position especially, for the longest time in the NFL, you know, the guy you wanted was Andre Johnson, Calvin Johnson, yeah. These ex-receivers that just are outside by themselves on the perimeter. They can beat press man. They can beat you with speed, all those things. Teams have gotten a lot more creative about how they use guys like a Devontae Smith or a DeSean Jackson or anybody else. And they'll use them in motion. They'll use them off the line of scrimmage. They find advantageous matchups for him. And I think that Devontae Smith is so good. And this is the vital thing. He's so competitive. If he fights and competes and he's scrappy, he does all those things. If he was some kind of dealer or something, then I would be really, really worried about how his size is going to affect him. So I still, look, you could get, the other thing that happens to Sean is guys aren't as good at playing press man as they used to be. Teams don't major in it like they used to because you just can't get away with it like you could. The rules have changed enough to benefit the offense that it's that part of it isn't as a concern. There aren't as many guys that can shut you down at the line of scrimmage. So I don't think it ends up hurting him. I think it comes down to one of these things between interviews, just which traits specifically are you looking for, the fastest burner versus the most physical guy. I mean, look, if you're an old school NFL guy, Ja'Marr Chase is 210 pounds. Devontae Smith is what? Was it 170, 175?
Like 180, I think. Something like that, yeah.
Jalen Waddle's not huge either.
No.
You know?
Nope. But that would be fun having
him
back.
I wonder if Jalen Waddle benefits this year from Devontae Smith being so little that Ja'Marr Chase is, or Jalen Waddle ends up looking like in comparison. Like, oh, okay, yeah, he's got size.
Yeah. 713-572-4610 if you want to get in Payne and Pendergast on a Thursday. What are the chances that Deshaun Watson goes from Patriots South to the actual Patriots? We've got the odds for you next. All right, so a couple odds that just came out yesterday that I think are relevant, very relevant to the Houston Texans. One comes from betonline.ag. Simple one, Seth. It is, will Deshaun Watson get traded? What do you think the favorite is right now? Yes or no? Do you think the favorite is yes or no?
I think the favorite is yes.
The favorite is actually no right now.
Is it? Oh.
Now, it doesn't give a time frame. It just says, will Deshaun Watson get traded? So, I could see where, I mean, if you got to hold out until 2022, like eventually Deshaun Watson may get traded. I guess if I were to caveat it by saying, will Deshaun Watson get traded before the start of the 2021 season, maybe?
Yeah, wait, how do they have a bet where there's no actual end date?
It's a great question, Seth. It's a great
question. I don't trust this. What sports book is this?
BetOnline.ag, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I don't, hey, you can lose, hey, give me $5,000, you can lose 10 pounds. You're like, okay, but how long is it going to... Well, that's a minor detail there.
Can you imagine Deshaun Watson gets traded at the very end of his career, like age 39, and some dude comes knocking on your door like, I'm going to need your money now. No, but no is actually... And I think it's sort of implied, is Deshaun Watson going to get traded here in this cycle that we're in right now? No is a pretty heavy favorite right now, minus 300. You risk $300 just to win a mere $100 on no right now for Deshaun Watson getting traded.
Do they tell you who the sharps are betting on in that?
They don't. I mean, the takeaway on this is that, at least for now, the odds makers or the betting public, maybe more appropriately, they are believing what the Texans are putting out there about not trading Deshaun Watson.
This is where I'm stuck, because while I remain highly critical of everything the Texans have done to get to this situation, I do not envy them or any other team in maneuvering their way out of this situation properly, because the number one thing that you could do to be a competitive football team moving forward would be to have Deshaun Watson back in the fold. So then the question becomes, okay, when do you give up on that? You know, what are you realistically going to do? What are the odds that whatever trade you pull off before the draft, because that's when your maximum value might be right before the draft, But what are the odds that any of those moves are going to end up paying off to the same degree as actually getting Deshaun Watson back into the fold? I don't think they're very good. And I would point to things like the RG3 trade, which the Rams didn't. Rams got a huge bounty for the RG3 trade and really didn't do a whole lot with it. Various other trades in history where it's not the same. And Herschel Walker is not the same. The ability of Herschel Walker to do for a football team what a modern quarterback can do for a football team is not the same anymore. So I can't criticize the Texans if they don't time the market properly. I think that their focus has got to be, if they think there's any chance at all of fixing this thing with Deshaun Watson, they got to try to keep doing that. So if this bet is, hey, will they trade Deshaun Watson before the draft? I would say no. I don't think they're going to trade him before the draft. Will they trade him before the end of the 2021 trade deadline? I would bet yes, they probably will.
Wow. Okay, so you think that the key date then is the trade deadline in season, not necessarily, not necessarily Deshaun comes back, you muck your way through this gray cloud of misery that he's wallowing in for the rest of the year, and then you trade him before the 2022 draft.
Yeah, I don't think that. I think that they call uncle. But what's the, by that point too, maybe you've got a better feel for whichever team. There might be a team. There might be teams. Oh, but there's just never been a trade like this. I think when it comes to who are buyers and who are sellers, at that trade deadline, if all of a sudden Deshaun Watson is actually on the market, then all of a sudden the teams that might typically not be buyers, the bad teams, might become your strongest buyers because you know that their draft picks are going to be valuable the next year. This is just such a weird dynamic to all this. It kind of flips everything on its head.
Well, if the problem with the trade deadline, Seth, is that the trade deadline is usually there to make deals that impact you in that particular season.
Right.
And if you're a playoff team, chances are you're set at quarterback. It's one thing to go empty the chamber for Jalen Ramsey at the trade deadline because you can get three or four cornerbacks onto the field at one time. It's one thing to empty the chamber for a wide receiver because you play two or three wide receivers at a given time. Quarterback is a very specific position. Good teams aren't going to go trading for quarterbacks. And bad teams, I mean, yeah, maybe they will. I mean, that's what's in the market. This just in, the teams that are in the market for Deshaun right now, largely, are bad teams.
Right.
You know?
Those bad teams don't look any better. At some point, the other big question will be, all right, is how much is Deshaun going to come off of his no-trade clause? At some point, yeah, maybe he gets shocked back into reality if a lot of the only serious offers start coming in from bad teams. Maybe he starts thinking, okay, well, all right, this isn't ideal, but I got to figure out a way to work on this. It's like going to marriage counseling. I would imagine a lot of people that go to marriage counseling, at least one party of the two people probably is kind of just very pessimistic about it.
Yes.
Just doesn't think that it's going to work out.
Yes.
And then maybe, were you one?
I can speak from experience.
Well, in your case, it didn't end up working out, which was for the better.
Yeah.
But in this case, like, how often is it that one person doesn't want to go to marriage counseling, but then it actually does work out? Like, through counseling, that person kind of maybe comes to realize a few things. They start working on some things. So, like, because maybe that's what this is, where the Texans want to go to marriage counseling. Deshaun Watson probably has no interest in going to marriage counseling. But if he feels like he's forced to do it and he goes into it with relatively good faith, is that, could the, what are the, give me some stats on this. Somebody text in 713-572-4610. Or better yet, tweet at me, because then I can tell you're an actual therapist. So go ahead and DM me at Seth C. Payne on Twitter.
Right, because everybody is who they are on Twitter.
It's easier sometimes if it's somebody
true.
That's clearly a therapist or something.
Can I just tell you that your take on comparing the Watson-Texan situation to marriage counseling has sent me to the most pessimistic place I've been to so far about the chances of them reconciling?
Well, do two things. Since I already offended a bunch of sex addicts earlier, apparently, if you are currently a sex addict or were in the past, but I suppose once a sex addict, always a sex addict, until you get a little bit older.
Recovering,
and your hormones just settle down a little bit.
Yeah.
Anybody that had an intervention and had to go to rehab or something, whenever you're sent to therapy and you really don't want to go, I'm guessing the success rates are pretty low.
Yes.
Right? It's got to be.
Like anything.
It's just got to be. So with Deshaun, if he grudgingly realized, wow, all these teams that want to trade for me also happen to be really bad teams, and they're going to be even worse when I get there because they're trading away draft picks, I guess I'll go to therapy with the Texans.
Right.
Is that the right environment where he's actually going to feel differently or change? And are the Texans willing to change? Are the Texans willing to say, hey, yeah, you know what, Deshaun? Yeah, we'll get rid of these one or two key front office people if that's what you want.
This is where I'll point out, if we're trying to stay optimistic about the situation, this is where I will point out something that McClain has repeatedly pointed out, which is Deshaun hasn't really given them a chance to pitch anything to him yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's all – he's – from pretty much the time they hired Nick Caserio, he's essentially cut off communication from the team. So, I mean, you got to have a conversation before you can even start to do anything remotely therapeutic for that situation. By the way, odds on the Patriots quarterback in week one, the New England Patriots. Marcus Mariota is the favorite at 5-2. Deshaun Watson is on this list at 10-1. Seth, I think anything with Deshaun Watson and the Patriots is a horrible value. I don't think he's going to the New England Patriots.
I read an article about who the Patriots quarterback will be, and one of the points the author made was that, hey, the Texans aren't listening to conversations right now about anybody. It made me wonder, all right, if there's one team that Nick Caserio could have clandestine conversations with and it would not leak ever, it would be the New England Patriots. It'll be a conversation between Caserio and Belichick. I think Casario's wise enough to realize that he can't involve Jack Easterby in this discussion. The Patriots and the Jack Easterby not necessarily on the best of terms. So now I don't know about Belichick, but the Patriots. So maybe is Caserio perhaps having conversations with Belichick about Deshaun Watson? And does that make you nervous because Bill Belichick probably has dad strength over Nick Caserio?
Yeah, you know what it makes me think is that if my first reaction is, boy, that would really be the last straw with the fan base. But I feel like, Seth, I feel like we're on like our fifth last straw with the fan base when it comes to
the
Texans.
There is no last straw.
Yeah.
There's always it's a last straw with 50% of the fan base. 50% will show up because they're the loyal friend that never lets you down. That's the problem with the NFL. There's just too much loyalty. It's like, yeah. Go watch a Bengals game or a Browns game over the last decade, you know, at either various time. There's still people in the stands. 50% of the people still show up. Now I'm not talking, we have listeners who are dead fast. Definitely, like, done with the Texans, at least for the short term. But if he were to go to the Patriots, the biggest question is Deshaun Watson actually going to not use his no-trade clause? Will he not block a trade to the Patriots? I think that he'd have to have a conversation with Cam Newton.
Yeah.
And Cam, who just said that Bill Belichick is misunderstood.
Yeah, I
think there's something to that. Belichick also, by all reports over the last couple of years, has realized that he needs to change his ways a little bit to deal with Gen Z. And this isn't anything new. He did the same thing when he had to deal with Generation X, when he had to deal with the millennials. I think he's genuinely tried to change, and that's part of the reason that Cam Newton had a different experience being coached by Belichick than Tom Brady did. And I think Deshaun Watson would be. I think Belichick could probably paint a picture of, hey, we're all about football. We're all about winning. You're not going to have somebody up in front of you giving some weird speech the night before a game, like Jack Easterby would when he was here. We kept him under wraps. We didn't let him make decisions and what have you.
That's going to be the most elaborate conspiracy theory of all time. If Deshaun Watson winds up traded to the New England Patriots. That you sent Bill O'Brien down here to be the coach, to eventually become the general manager, with Jack Easterby reportedly whispering into his ear, and then eventually Jack Easterby and Cal McNair go pick up Nick Caserio to be the GM to hand deliver, figuratively, Deshaun Watson to Bill Belichick. The most nefarious conspiracy theory of all time to get the next great quarterback into a New England Patriot uniform.
And then, in the ultimate of all troll jobs, Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick will secure a trademark for Texans North. And I know people are saying, why would they want to be that? Simply for the troll value.
Yeah,
simply for the troll value. Because ultimately all of that, all Patriots, because then the Texans genuinely would be Patriots South. We'd be the farm team.
Yeah.
Hey, you know who had a bunch of ex-Texans players on the team when they won a Super Bowl last
Patriots,
time.
Yeah.
The Patriots, they had like six ex-Texans. They were all backups and whatnot, which is even more of a case. It was like their expanded playoff roster in baseball.
Yep.
Where you bring up a bunch of AAA guys.
Yeah.
That's what the Patriots had done. They brought up a bunch of guys from their AAA squad in Houston.
100%.
And they were there for the Super Bowl.
Yep. Steven Anderson, John Simon. These guys all have Super Bowl rings. Thanks to the New England Patriots. Let's go to the phone, 713-572-4610. Let's talk to Adam. Adam, you're up on Payne and Pendergast. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How's it going?
Hey, first off, thank you guys for entertaining me through the first 4 hours of my monotonous farm life each day. So thank you for that. Anyway, I have sort of a request for maybe some business advice / fan therapy. So for the first time in the Texans' existence, I have been offered the opportunity to get season tickets. And I've always wanted them. My family had Oilers season tickets from the start to the finish of their existence. Any other year, I would jump on it in a heartbeat. And I am just like, my heart hurts so bad because it feels like I haven't felt this way since the Oilers left town. And everything I keep hearing from people is, you know, the way you really show them that you care about that team is to not give them your money right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, should I weigh that, like, oh, my heart and my fandom for this team versus, is this a good business decision right now?
Yeah.
Should I get
Alan,
these tickets?
I'm going to ask you, let's see.
Yeah, Adam.
Oh, Adam, I apologize, Adam. Adam, what kind of a farmer are you? What's that?
We run a smaller organic produce farm. We feed the employees of a pretty decent sized company outside of in Central Texas. So I don't sell it or anything. I'm very fortunate. We just feed the employees there, which is pretty cool.
That's a little tougher because I was going to, like, if you had said you're a pig farmer or something, I was going to look at pork futures and try to make a decision based on pork futures and the current price of Texan tickets.
What's the organic produce futures look
I don't
like?
Know there's that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that if you're planning on being a fan of the Texans for a long time, for the rest of your life, then I think you should get the tickets. I think that it's a lifelong commitment, and it's hard right now. But I don't know if buying low versus buying high in situations like this is appropriate, because it's not really an investment, right? It's more of an emotional investment. And it's an investment
sure.
where you have to say, all right, I'm going to be bringing my kids or cousins or whomever up to this for generations to come or decades to come.
Yeah.
So you can have a lot of memories because of that. And some of those memories, sometimes the misery makes the eventual victory that much sweeter.
Yes.
So these are the hard times that one day you'll reflect upon with kind of almost a weird nostalgia. You know, sometimes in your life you're nostalgic for a time in your life that actually sucked. It's one of those strange human things we do. That's what you'll have by spending a whole bunch of money right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I guess I should have been a little more clear, too, in saying, like, okay, well, it's been very difficult to get these in the past. Do you see it becoming easier in the coming years if I pass this opportunity right now?
That I would say, Adam, we appreciate the phone call. That I would say yes, just based purely on supply and demand. I'll tell you what I base it on, Seth, as somebody who's been on the wait list for tickets for a long, long time. I was on the wait list for season tickets before I got over to Sports Radio 610. Once I got here, I started doing game day stuff. So I figured once I get to the top of the list, I'll let them know I'm good to go. I work on game days. Plus, my wife has season tickets. I was in the several thousand range on the wait list for a long time, like 5,000 or 6,000 on the wait list. And then this is before all the weirdness of what's gone on lately has happened, but it was more during the pandemic. I think the pandemic may have impacted the wait list as much, if not more, than all the goofiness going on behind the scenes with the football team right now. Because I shot up to the top where I was getting emails and phone calls about, hey, it's your turn to get season tickets. And I didn't do it because I work on game days and we've got them already. I say all this, Adam, to say that the economy and maybe some of the stuff going on with the team has certainly, I think, made it a little bit easier to do that. But I don't know the exact numbers to it. I would agree with Seth, which is, hey, man, if you're a football fan and you're willing to endure a couple down seasons, which I think they're going to have with or without Deshaun Watson, then go for it. It's fun to go to football games on Sundays in the state of Texas, you know?
Yeah, you weigh all that into it. I'm not trying to give you a rosy. This isn't even about the Texans specifically.
Right.
It's just, you got to make a, don't make a short-term decision on something that's actually a long-term commitment, I suppose.
Yep, good way to put it. All right, according to one prominent national...
I can't find any... Somebody text in and tell me what's the closest thing to just organic produce on the futures market. I guess corn? That doesn't really... It's not the same thing.
Your curiosity is so endearing. All right.
It's an interesting synonym for annoying.
Yes, well, it's... you're fine. Two national reports on J.J. Watt. One claims three favorites for J.J. Watt. The other actually gives a specific dollar amount that he's been offered. The latest on the future Hall of Famer, next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.